Welcome to the Kingdom Life Church podcast. We hope you enjoy this message by Pastor Jamie Dixon. For more great content, visit klcmaine.com.
So, Genesis chapter 1. So we started a new series last week called Our New Normal. And now I know that that is a really terrible sermon title right now for people. If you want people to come to church, don't do a series called The New Normal. I think we're all a little sick of hearing The New Normal, right? But I really feel like, we're talking about The New Normal right now in this all the new restrictions and all the new limitations to life that we're going to have to get used to. But I want to present to you that from heaven's perspective, that there is a new normal, and it doesn't look like limitation. It looks like greater liberty. And I feel like God used this season to liberate believers all over the nations of the earth. And I talked about it last week. You can go back and listen to it. But I felt like God was restoring rest to his people, that they would be ready and prepared for what was coming. And you guys know that when you know that there's a great thing coming, you rest up before it happens, right? If you know you gotta run, you rest. And I feel like God put a mandated rest on his people to get ready to run into what he has for us in the days ahead. I also believe God was recalibrating our vision. I think in the busyness and the chaos, we're the busiest generation in the history of the world, and it's really easy to lose sight on the divine purposes of God over your life and during busy seasons. And I think the Lord simplified life for us so that we could re-engage it with fresh vision in the days ahead and recalibrate our vision to what he's saying and doing. And then I also felt like the Lord was purging the church of its idolatry. That's the big one, aggressive terminology. But I think we could even accidentally create idols of the very things that God called us to do, that we could actually create idolatry out of it. It's not that that gathering together is inherently bad, but there's something to be said about God purifying the gathering, that it's no longer a have to, but a now we get to, that he removed religious obligation from it and retaught us how to engage his heart without the training wheels of the church, if I could say it that way, that God was restoring a prayer life and restoring worship and restoring faithfulness without the church motivating it for us, that we had to find a way to reconnect with the Lord and build connection and fellowship during the season. And I feel like God purged our hearts that when we came back together, the altar would be purified and our gathering would be that much more powerful. And I feel like God's been doing, he was doing a lot in this season, but all for the purpose of how are we going to run out of the season and what are we going to pursue? And I feel like we're still right there. As many people are coming back to some measures of normalcy, I feel like God, there's a window here that we could really really respond to the Lord and say, Lord, how can I run into what you have? And that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about our new normal, our new approach to pursuing the Lord. I want to talk about how do we chase after the things of God like never before right now. How are we going, if we have this moment where everything in life changed and we have a blank slate, what's the story we're going to write in the days ahead? I don't want to wander. I don't want to drag my feet. I want to run into this season. And I want to look at Genesis 1 because this morning, over the next couple weeks, I realized that we're abbreviating the services a little bit, and so like I can't necessarily do entire sermons on the stuff I want to, but I'm going to kind of intro what we're going to talk about next week, and I want to talk about our corporate and individual kingdom culture that we're building. Who are we? Where are we going? And how are we going to get there? And look with me at Genesis 1:27. Because I want to make it so clear, you know, some people have really felt like the Lord has led them to become part of Kingdom Life Church in this season. Some of you have been with us for many years, and some of you are you know, some of you, your first Sunday was our last Sunday before the pandemic. Exactly. I see you. Hey, good for you for staying engaged. Come on, let's go. That was the best callback I've ever had, I think. In Genesis 1:27, I want to talk about who we are, because it's so important that what we're chasing after together. Listen, there's 1,000 churches that you could find and plug into. Why is God calling you to be a part of Kingdom Life Church? Because I don't believe it's just happenstance. I don't think it's just random. I think God called you together because there's a shared belief and value system that we're to run with and share together. And there is a vision and a calling on your life that connects to the corporate house's calling. So not only are we going to talk about who we are as a church, but we're going to talk about who you are in connection to that greater vision that God's brought us together for. Amen? And so Genesis 1:27, we've got God makes man, right? And so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over every living thing that moves upon the earth. God makes man in his image. It says, let us make man in our image, which means that God, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, the triune Godhead, made man as triune beings, that we would be body, soul, and spirit, that we would actually become, you know, what was the temple, right? Outer courts, inner courts, holy of holies. All of that was external, but God's intention and plan from the beginning was that you would become an outer court, an inner court, and a holy of holies, that you would become a dwelling place and a container for the triune Godhead to dwell inside of you, right? This is who God made you to be, carriers of his glory, carriers of his presence. You were always called from the beginning of time to be the temple, his carrier, right? And so God says, let us make man in our image. And then God creates the earth and says, now, man, I want you to rule over it. What he says is that word, subdue, multiply, have dominion. It's the word for colonize. Everyone say colonize. Colonize is a word that has some measure of like military implications, right? The idea is this. The word colonize is the idea of like a greater, bigger kingdom had war with a smaller kingdom, and they won the battle, and the part of the reward of winning a battle is you take territory and land. You win cities, right? And so what Rome would do is that when Rome would win a war, they would colonize the land that they won in the battle. And the way that they did that was that they would create a governor called an apostle. Have you ever heard that word before? It's a secular term for a governor, an apostle. An apostle would lead a delegate of 300 individuals that represented education, finance, politics, religion, and they would take leaders and delegations from Rome, and they would send them into colonies in order to colonize it, and the people would dress like the Romans, they would learn Roman education, they would learn the Roman belief systems, and so whenever you went into a colony of Rome, you knew you were in a colony of Rome because it looked like Rome, it felt like Rome, it carried the very essence of the Roman kingdom. Right? And so this delegation would go to colonize, and you know, the whole term do as the Romans do is actually a terminology of colonizing. And so what he's saying here is he's saying, I've made this on earth as it is in heaven type of garden where there is no separation of fellowship between God and man. You dwell in this land, you dwell in this location. And what I want you to do is I want you to carry this garden and I want you to go to the ends of the earth and I want you to make it look like the place that you came from. I want you to colonize the earth with the reality of the Garden of Eden, heaven on earth. Right? And this is the very mission he gave to man at the beginning. And we know the story, right? So man's given this authority. Man has authority over creation. Lucifer, fallen angel, manifests as creation, a snake, gets Adam to rebel. And by rebelling, what you submit to, you empower. By rebelling against the Lord and submitting to creation, you know, like, oh, God knows that if you take this, you'll be just like him. You should do it. And they take of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He yielded his authority over to creation. So when sin entered in, sin was aroused within man. The creation took authority over man instead of man over creation. Sickness, disease, death, calamity enters in. And so God appears in the garden. He's walking with them in the garden. And he says, hey, to Lucifer, you're because of what you've done, you're going to be cursed and you're going to crawl on your belly all the days of your life. And you, son of man, or no, then he says, and there's one that will come from the womb of the woman, and you will bruise his heel, but he will crush your head. And the Father promises Jesus to Adam and Eve and says, Jesus is going to come and destroy the works of what you've accomplished in this place, right? And we know the story, right? Jesus comes, and one of the darkest hours, the doors are closed. Jesus appears as a radiant light. He comes with a kingdom message. He comes with salvation in his wings, and he takes upon us all of our sin, all of the guilt, all of the shame. He takes it upon himself. He becomes the propitiation for our sins, the ransom price for our guilt. And God purchases us through the blood of his son, Jesus, right? And he dies. And when he dies, in 1 Peter, it says that between the day he died and the day he rose again, that he descended into hell and he took back the keys of authority that Adam yielded over to Lucifer, that Jesus takes them back. And he resurrects again and he appears to the disciples in Matthew 28. And he goes, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. This is not some new authority that he just gained. This was the original authority given to Adam that was forfeited and now has been returned. And he appears in Matthew 28. He says, all authority in heaven and earth has been given to me. Now go and make disciples of all nations. And do you guys realize what that is? That is the language of colonize the earth. It was after this moment the disciples began to call themselves what? Apostles. Right? Governors of an ecclesia, which was a gathering of a delegation or a gathering of people following the orders of an apostolic leadership, and they would be sent out to all the ends of the earth from a hub that would go to all the ends of the earth to carry the kingdom message that Jesus told them to go forth and preach. Do you realize the original commandment given to Adam to go forth to all the nations is fulfilled in Matthew 28? The apostles were raised up to raise up delegations of believers that would go to the ends of the earth carrying the kingdom message to make on earth as it is in heaven. When Jesus prayed, may your kingdom come, your will be done on the earth as it is in heaven, he is restoring our mandate that was given to mankind that was created. What it says in Romans 8:19, all creation is groaning and waiting for the revealing of the sons and daughters of God. Why? Because creation is subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of the one who subjected it in hope, that all creation would be delivered into the same liberty of the sons and daughters of God, which means that Jesus broke the power of sin and death, but he put his spirit inside of you, that you would now become an ambassador of the message and the gospel of the kingdom, that you would carry the ministry of reconciliation, and that that is Christ in you is the hope that God received glory. You experienced liberty. Now you carry that liberty to all the nations that are groaning to the ends of the earth. You're crying out, say, God, end racial injustice in America. God, end human trafficking around the nations of the earth. Guess what? God will answer your prayers, but you know how he's going to answer his prayers? He's going to raise up a person. He will raise up a people. Because you are now deliverers, you are now apostles, you are now delegations of a kingdom reality that's meant to go into places of injustice and bring kingdom justice on the earth as is in heaven. Yeah. Illness, sickness, disease, all these things are injustices against humanity that Jesus arrested on the cross, and now he's given you authority to go and arrest every demon, every principality, and every stronghold and bring them into truth, into the liberties that we've experienced. You right? Why am I saying all this? Because when we set out to like name this church, I remember the day I was actually in Planet Fitness. We had gone like 2 weeks. I was sitting on the leg machine doing leg presses, right? And clearly I haven't been there in a little while. It's been close. I was sitting on the leg press, and I was doing leg presses, and we had been talking about a name for weeks. And I was sitting there going, God, what is the calling of this church you call us to plant? And this whole message he brought to me, this is the message he brought to me. And I heard the Lord say, Kingdom Life Church. Because God was going to raise up an apostolic center that would send out kingdom delegations to colonize the earth and carry revival. that we would have a kingdom life, that we would be ambassadors of another kingdom, and that we'd carry a kingdom culture into cities and nations of the earth. And in Ephesians chapter 4 says, and I've given some to be apostles and prophets and teachers and pastors and evangelists for the training and equipping of the saints for the works of ministry. And our vision here is to be a hub of training and equipping delegations of revivalists that would be sent into families, into cities, into workplaces, into nations, that we would send them, carrying kingdom values that transform secular worlds. This is our vision. This is what we feel called to do. And my goal over the next couple weeks is to shape the culture of Kingdom Life Church. And as we're growing, as people are coming in and new people are engaging, I want to be known from the outset. Who are we? We are an apostolic hub that's training, equipping believers for the works of ministry. Our goal is to send. That doesn't mean that you're not here, but that just means that we're sending you every week to go in the power of the gospel and to go into transformed cities, to carry revival, to know who you are, and to carry a message that changes things. There's nothing more. There's going to be growing systems and growing needs. Gosh, I'm trying to figure out this whole 9 o'clock to 10:30 thing. We got, have grace with us. We're trying to figure this all out. We're trying to figure out how to move forward, but there's nothing more important than giving language and understanding of a culture that we have to preserve and multiply within a family that is growing. Because here's the thing. We don't want to shape our culture based upon the preferences of a people or a denomination. There are things that are assumed about who we are because people identify us with a denomination, and I'm so confused because I didn't sign up to be a part of a denomination. I signed up for the kingdom. And there's just some things that don't translate to me. You know what I mean? I don't want to do this off of preference. I don't want to do this off of denominational alliance. I want to do this off of the kingdom. I want to reflect the transferable truths of the scriptures that can be replicated into every individual, into every family, into every small group, and into our church. My hope is that the culture we create here will become the culture of individuals. It will become the culture of families and homes and businesses and small groups and friendships and ultimately of cities. That we would create an incubator of understanding that would translate into human individual life and behavior. Because when we consider culture, we often think of music, art, politics, the things we hear on the radio, the things we see on TV, that's how we think of culture. But I've heard culture said like this, and I love this definition. I heard someone describe culture as an iceberg. The part that can be seen above the waves reflects the isolated behaviors and outcomes of the culture. But the bulk of it, the biggest part of it, though submerged and may not be seen, is comprised of the shared beliefs and assumptions that are often shaped over generations. What we see above the surface are often the artifacts and the consequences of culture rather than the values, beliefs, and assumptions that actually drive the culture and the behaviors and outcomes we observe. The reality is whatever we see is determined by what we don't see. That there are shared beliefs, that there are common messages and understandings among a group of people that determine the behavior. Listen, there's a reason why that, Lance and Michelle go to an evangelism night and they're out doing stuff and they come up to a lady with a prophetic word and this really happened. And somebody gave, I think it was actually Joanna, your team with Lance and Michelle, they were out and they gave a prophetic word and it was really profound and impactful. That person gets online and then puts it in the Winslow What's Happening Facebook group. Does anybody know the group of people that would have been out tonight praying for people, laying hands on the sick, and somebody that does not attend our church contacts Lance and Michelle and goes, that sounds like something your church would do. Right? Listen, there's a reason why. Because our behaviors reflect some values. And when we create a value, it determines a behavior. And so when people start seeing behaviors, they will begin to connect it to a people that have cultivated a value system. And this is why that we cannot just tell people, don't sin and don't do this. We've got to get to the core of values and beliefs in their heart that are not creating behaviors that reflect the values. Right? And so what I want to talk about over the next couple of weeks of who are we? I've already identified like the big mission. We are an apostolic sending center of training and equipping believers for the works of ministry. I won't be shy about it. We don't want to be subtle. We want global takeover with the gospel of the kingdom. That's probably going to upset somebody. But we want to go to the ends of the earth. There's no injustice that I feel like we are not called to invade. There's no situation that I feel like we are absent from or distant from. We are called to the front lines to carry the kingdom into everything that opposes his nature. But how are we going to build a people that actually rally behind a vision and actually carry those values? We've got to learn and understand and engage those values. The culture of a family or of a church is dictated by its shared beliefs and values of the congregation. What we believe determines how we behave. What we believe will determine what we value. And what we value will determine what we choose. And our choices will send a message that points back to what we believe in. You know, the reality is Jesus came at a time when there's a lot of political affiliations connected to religion. And there are major people looking to Jesus as being a political leader, not as a salvation, as a son of God, divine being. And so people were looking to him. So he came preaching, and he's preaching salvation, but he came on the Sermon on the Mount. And what was Jesus' approach to the crowd? The crowds are gathering, massive crowds. And Jesus points out the crowd and goes, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye. But I'm telling you, if someone strikes you on the cheek, you give them the other as well. If someone says go a mile, you go too. I'm telling you that you've heard it said that to murder a man is sin, but I'm telling you, even if you say fool in your heart towards that man, you've committed murder in your heart. You've heard it said that adultery is sin, but I'm telling you, even if you look at a woman lustfully, you are sinning in your heart. Listen, Jesus comes, and the message of the kingdom was one of confrontation and polarization, where he's saying, you are of that world, but I'm inviting you to be a part of this world. And he came in a way that was confrontational to ways of men. And what I want to present to you is that if you want to carry a kingdom reality into a city, you cannot follow the patterns of the world. You have got to follow the patterns of the kingdom. We cannot follow in the trends in the ways of the world is doing things. Someone's got to carry a kingdom message that goes further. You know, they say go 1 mile, but I go 2 miles. Someone asks for my jacket, I give him my tunic as well. Someone slaps him in the cheek, I give him the other as well. Listen, we've got to do this thing differently because we will have no message if we blend in. And the gospel of the kingdom is confrontational. You know, the world says you have a right to be offended. And the gospel of the kingdom says you forfeited that right at salvation. Right? You have a right to your opinion. And then the gospel of the kingdom says, yeah, but you may have forfeited that right if it caused wounds to the very person that you are ministering to. Right? Like there's just something about the gospel of the kingdom that is different than the presentations of the world. And this is what I mean by we've got to begin to get, and if I could use this word, indoctrinated with kingdom values that confront the secular parts of my thinking and in my world that feels uncomfortable to go the ways of the world, that I know that I come from another world. I know that I come from another kingdom. I'm not allowed to go with the mainstream. I've got to swim upstream and get the heart of God that I could carry kingdom impact. Hebrews 11:13 says, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them from afar, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind the country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Could you imagine, we are ambassadors living in this world, and though we look all around us, we do not see heavenly reality, but we see them from afar off, and we preach distant things into the current situation. We become those that reach into the heavenlies and pull them into the realities. Like we, someone could be like, hey, I have cancer, I have terminal illness, I'll never get better, I'm just trying to make the most of my time. And we go, actually, there's Jehovah Rapha. I know a guy that can heal your sickness and your illness. Let me reach into the invisible and pull into the natural. I'm not from this world. My king gives me authority to heal your illness. Right? Like, I can pull into the unseen and bring it to the natural because I am ambassador. I'm a bridge that carries his reality into something that opposes it. 2 Corinthians 5:16. So from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. So from now, did you just call me Sammy? Oh, okay. I thought you said Sammy. All right, 2 Corinthians 5. So from now on, we regard no one from a worldly point of view. Though we once regarded Christ in this way, we do so no longer. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, the new creation has come. The old has gone away, the new is here. All that is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and gave us the ministry of reconciliation, that God was reconciling the world back to himself in Christ. Now counting people's sin against them, or not counting people's sin against them. And he has committed to us the message of reconciliation. We are therefore Christ's ambassadors, as though God were making his appeal through us. It says God has made you an ambassador as if God was making his appeal to the earth through you. Could you imagine the Father's in heaven and he's going, I love you. And everyone's just, no, I love you. And everyone's going about their life. What did he do? He made you and put his spirit inside of you. And he goes, tell him I love him. And you're going into the calamity of all the yelling and the screaming and all the creations groaning and waving. And you go, he loves you. And now people are waking up to the reality because God is making his appeal through you. That there's another way. There's another message. There is a family that's not broken. It's called the family of God. There's fathers and there's mothers here that will heal your heart. I love you, and I made moms and dads that will bring you in. You feel worthless. There's a purpose and a calling. I've called you to co-labor and be a co-heir with me. You feel pointless, but I'm telling you there's a point, and God is making his appeal through you. Over the next couple weeks, what we're going to do is I'm going to, I don't know how long this will take, honestly. Let's just be honest. I don't know how long this is going to take, but over the next couple weeks, what I'm going to do is I want to go through, we have been over the past 10 years, we have been wrestling with God over the values of a community. And I feel like there's been these sweet moments that God revealed a value to us of the kingdom. That represents the kingdom. There's these moments, I could tell you right when it happened, where God revealed something, we're like, this is my kingdom. And then we watch God manifest on the streets, right? We watch God manifest in front of us and to do profound, I could tell story after story after story of God revealing his nature to us. And over the next few weeks, what we're gonna do is we're gonna talk about kingdom values. There's no possible way I could explore all of them. But I will do this, is we're gonna go over our shared values as a community, not only on a macro level, how it builds a church community, but on an individual level, how you incorporate this into your families, into your homes. Some of those things that we're going to discuss are how the kingdom manifests in the context of family. I think we gotta leave membership culture and enter into family culture. Yeah? Listen, when we have kingdom values that shape our world, The king will only manifest himself in his kingdom. So when kingdom values shape a world, the king can manifest. Anybody want the King of Kings to manifest? Do you want him to walk through the doors of your home, the doors of our church, the doors of our gatherings, the doors of our workplaces? We've got to shape a kingdom environment that the King of Kings can walk through. The kingdom manifests in the God's family. We're going to talk about being prisoners of hope, how believers need to be obnoxiously optimistic, unwaveringly hopeful. We should be the happiest people on the earth, right? We are prisoners of hope. We have no other options. We're called to be, here's another one we're going to talk about. Powerful people are motivated by freedom. Do you know, I already said this, but did you know that you were created to be a carrier of the triune Godhead? He made you to carry his power. You have more power in your pinky than all the antichrists of hell. You are literally on a parade of arresting demonic ideologies and strongholds all over the earth. Everywhere you go, wherever your foot goes, it claims land. Do you know how powerful you are? Probably not. But did you know that you will never experience the power that he has for you until you learn how to operate and to live out of liberty? It is for freedom that Christ has set you free. We're going to talk about it, and I'll show you. I'll show you how creating cultures of freedom and opportunity create powerful people. Okay? We're called to be co-laborers and co-heirs. Christ in you is the hope that God will receive glory. This is God's plan, is that he would give us an inheritance, that he would share his inheritance with us, that his purpose, his plans would be established through your life. You are here to co-labor with Christ unto this end. We are called to be a people of his presence. It's the beginning and the end, that Jesus came for eternal, unbroken communion and fellowship with God. Do you know why worship here, for me, I don't know about you, but for me, it's never cookie cutter. I don't care if we sing the same songs every service. I just, and this is why I have a hard time with three services. Can I just be honest with you for a second? I get a hard time with three services. And one of the reasons being is because I am a presence of God junkie, and I will never manufacture a service for the sake of time. Like, if we get into the presence of God, I'm going to get lost there, dude. And I want to get locked in. I want to host the presence of God. If we're not hosting the presence of God, what the heck are we doing? Right? And so this is why our services go poof, and just be a mess. Right? Because I refuse to be a professional pastor. I won't do it. But we are a people of his presence. It's the reward of salvation, the eternal, unbroken communion with God. It's the beginning and the end of our lives. And last but not least, divine order attracts divine influence. And when the church, when individuals align their priorities to heaven, it invites the presence of the divine, the presence of divine influence. You wonder how the impossible begins to happen in front of people. They align their priorities to the priorities of heaven and invites divine influence into the situation. This is called the realm of the miraculous. Why don't you guys stand with me?